Live from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank, the bank that specializes in understanding you. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of North Fulton Business Radio. I'm John Ray, and we are not in our normal home inside Renaissance Bank, but the folks over at Renaissance are busy. They're busy helping their clients and actually folks that aren't clients with another round of PPP loans. And that ought to tell you something about this bank, folks, because they are interested in serving the community, and they do that in a personal way. Yet they're big enough to handle pretty much any problem you throw at them. So here's what my suggestion is. If you're tired of 1-800 numbers and computer-generated voices at your bank, then go to renaissancebank.com, find their local office, and give them a call. They've got about 200 of those offices around the South ready to serve you, and go see them. And what you'll find is that they deal with you like you were a human being, and that's can be refreshing depending on what bank you're at currently. And so if you need some help with your business, they'll be glad to do it. And I can tell you from my experience that you'll be glad you did. Renaissance Bank, understanding you, member FDIC. And now I want to welcome Erica Ramsey Bowen. And Erica is with Peachy Paw Traits. I love that. And Little Bayou Fairy Factory. Erica, welcome.
Thank you so much, John. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm so grateful for this opportunity.
Well, I'm delighted to have you. And you've got the most, I think you're already a winner for 2021 on our Business Radio X guest for most imaginative names for your business. I think you've already retired the award for this year. So congratulations.
I'd like to thank the Academy.
Yeah, there you go. Let's get into it. Why don't you give a little overview of how you're serving folks out there?
I love that phrase, serving, because I do want to be of service with what I've created the past 2 years and continue to create. A quick blurb. I was in corporate as an administrative professional for almost 20 plus years. I worked for top tier Fortune 400 companies. I won't name them, but I have stories. And then something happened. I had a very severe aha moment one day while working in the office, and there was nothing dramatic about it. I just began to lay out my plan for how I could bring out joyful, wonderful, supportive art and inspiring works into the world. And that sounds a lot of crunchy, but it's the truth. And that's where I was 2 years ago. And since then, and throughout the pandemic, I've been growing my company. So we create pet portraits, which I call Pawtraits. And we also illustrate books, primarily children's books, but that has since changed a little bit.
A lot there, but let's talk about that epiphany you had. Okay. And kind of what led up to that? I mean, I've known you for quite a while, and you were in several different roles that I knew you in. I mean, but what kind of led to that epiphany? Because you've always been an artist, right?
Yes, I went to school for art, specifically what is now UNCSA in North Carolina for high school, and then to what is now Savannah College of Art and Design. At the time, it was Atlanta College of Art. So I began that path, and then life happened. And I went through this really bizarre mental journey where I just was convinced I wasn't going to be an artist. So for 20 years, I worked in admin. In fact, when I began my company, I actually had people say to me, this kind of hurt my feelings a bit, you draw? I was like, yes, I do. A little, a lot. But yeah, I was working in a really great company. You can look at my bio on LinkedIn. But there was no joy there. I was dreading waking up in the morning. I didn't feel healthy mentally. And I also felt like what I was creating was not anything that was alive. I wasn't helping anyone in any significant manner. I mean, my bosses maybe felt like I helped them specifically. But there was this kind of a, I guess, a midlife crisis. So I came home and told my husband, hey, guess what, honey? I'm starting a company. And he was like, you're what? Yeah, I quit my job. And he's like, you're what? By the way, ladies and gentlemen, that's probably not the best way to start a business. Lesson learned.
You want to give it a little more runway than that, right?
A wee bit.
Yeah.
Love your family.
Right.
Love yourself. Love your marriage. Love your partnership.
Yeah, that's a good idea. But yeah, you know, that what you're talking to is I think there are a lot of folks, and particularly the pandemic has brought this out for a lot of people, is, hey, you know, life is short. Life is stressful. Life is unpredictable. All these things at the same time. And I want to do something that really makes my heart sing. Talk to those folks about making that change beyond giving their spouse a little more, a little more warning about what their plans are. Right.
Yeah. Shout out to my husband, Scott.
Yeah.
So this actually was very interesting during the pandemic for my associates and clients who were following me on social media. I kept getting comments like, you're at the speed of light. You're busy nonstop. You haven't stopped. You're creating more. How, why, what's going on? How are you able to do that? Two answers. And also I got a lot of queries about, well, I want to perhaps write a children's book. How should I go about it? Well, a couple of those folks became my clients, which is great. But a couple of those folks I actually had to coach through in a very casual way, because I'm not a coach, the fear of taking a chance and maybe helping them measure that out. Because many people, when you're at home on Zoom during the pandemic, many people came to that aha moment unwillingly, that what they were doing wasn't supporting anything of who they were in the world. I think it also, unfortunately, condensed our relationships, the status of our relationships, so their relationships with their children and work. Perhaps they had some aha moments about, they discovered the companies they worked for were either awesome, and I can list specific examples of that off the air, or not so awesome, that were not so supportive. There were some companies that went over and beyond helping their employees. And then there were some that it magnified how little the employees were thought of. So I had people reaching out to me going, I just realized my company doesn't care about me. Mm. And I'm never going to make a difference in the world working here. Erica, what did you do? Why did you decide to do what you do? And so those are the folks I would love to speak to. I'm welcoming you to contact me. And you can contact me via my business phone number, which, John, I think you're going to post. Mm-hmm. My LinkedIn. I'm always willing, open, and happy to help you maybe kind of weigh some of that out. Because I had to go through that. And unfortunately, I didn't include my husband. So you don't want to do it alone either. You want to have whoever is in your family and your circle be a part of that process. Don't just spring it on them, folks. But right. They actually may have ideas too, which is important. So did that answer the question, John?
Yeah, no, it does. And, yeah. And I think that's great because, what you're able to speak to, I mean, you made this change at the end of 2019. So before the pandemic started, so yours was, so it can happen at any time, I guess is the point. It doesn't have to be necessarily pandemic inspired or pushed in some way because of that. It can happen at any time for folks that maybe have had a deferred dream.
That's a great, gosh, I'm so glad you're taping this because you keep coming with these great phrases, deferred dream. I realized I was going to have on my headstone, here lies Erica. She did a really good PowerPoint. And that was the click of just like, that's not my legacy.
Right. So you're an illustrator, you're an artist. Why pets? Why children's books? Of all the things you could draw?
First of all, when I was a child, I was an awkward kid. They would probably nowadays call me ADHD. They do call me that now. And I also was very socially awkward. I probably had a low EQ, emotional intelligence, but I was an avid reader. And two things happened out of that. One is that books for a child are trusted friends. Think about it. You can rely upon there always being a good, happy ending in Harry Potter. At the very end, he defeats the bad guy. That's reliable. When you're a kid who's, mentally insecure and facing some challenges, what a great friend to have that's always there. So that was that. The second was that as a child, because I was reading all the time, I kept waiting to find a hero that looked, acted, thought maybe a little bit like me. Not so much. I kept finding these little boys in England who were out there slaying dragons. And I'm thinking, great, where's the girl? I guess she's making the, I don't know, the armor or something for the guy. So that's when it started to churn in my head that I need to have that ability. Well, I put that aside. And then years later, my niece comes up. And we were discussing Harry Potter, as a matter of fact, in a good way, because I love Harry Potter. And she goes, Auntie E, why aren't there any African-American wizards, or why aren't there any African-American fairies? And my heart sank, because, John, that was only 10 years ago.
Sure.
And I thought, really? We're in this progressed age, and we have no girls out there kicking butt, taking names in the South? Like, hello, I'm a Southerner. I'm a proud Southerner. You got to tell me. We tell great stories. Why are we not doing that? So that's what was the, you know, the charge behind that. And then around pets, I love animals. I thought I was going to be a vet at one point, just like I thought I was going to be many things. Mm-hmm. But pets are easy subject matter. They always look great. They always present well. In fact, owners are proud of their ugly pets. So you can paint them as they are. And owners are very grateful and excited and happy. So that's the why.
So, folks, we're speaking with Erica Ramsey Bowen, and Erica is, here's another thing in the show notes I particularly love. She's the Chief Shenanigans Wrangler. That's a title I don't think I'm going to run across here again soon. with her own company, Peachy Paw Traits and Little Bayou Fairy Factory. I have to say that slowly so I can make sure I get it right.
You did great.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, we've been through a tumultuous time through the pandemic, but also through civil unrest related to racial issues. So, you know, how have you navigated that piece of what we've been through over the last year?
That's a great question. So the first part of that is poorly. Like many of us, I, in so many ways, was caught flat-footed, didn't expect to see the kind of unraveling of a lot of our great country's togetherness and unity in such a manner. And I'm sure I'm probably putting that mildly. However, after I stopped having all the emotions, because I was probably one of those who got caught up initially in all of the emotion. I'm guilty of that. And I tried to take a cooler head prevails type attitude. I realized that who I am as a person in this country and what I believe in this country is that we are a great country. We have an ability to do amazing things together, as evidenced what by 9/11. I kept going back to that horrible moment in history of like, well, we all came together during that time. What is happening here that we're not? And I actually had a very interesting conversation with another author who is a noted historian on World War One, and he's a completely different person than I, and he lives in a completely different area of the world than I, and has a completely different background. But we came together with the agreement that what was happening was breaking our hearts, and we needed to do something about it. So more about that in a little bit, but my initial response was my way of coping and grieving with everything that was happening was to be who I am and even more so. So to keep at it, create positivity, create happiness, create things that people can come together around and experience the greatness of this country. So that's why the little Bayou Fairy is who she is. She's in Louisiana. She doesn't fit in. She's facing horrible circumstances. She's a fairy, but she can't really fly. Hello. How messed up is that? It's kind of like us. We're supposed to be out there. We're social beings, but we're isolated from one another. So I didn't want it to become a African-American book. By the way, listeners, I'm African-American, in case you can't tell. Sometimes that happens. Mm. But I didn't want this to be an African-American children's book. I'm making quote marks with my fingers. I wanted this to be a universally beloved fairy tale, so that they can identify with what's happening. And I hope they can. I think they can.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess what I'm not a creative person, so I can't draw a straight line with a ruler. But
I bet you can.
Well, maybe if you give me three chances at it, I can. But I guess that what I wonder about someone like you is, you know, how, I guess clarity of your vision, I would think is really important for you to be able to do what you do. And so being caught up in a time where it's a little, in a tumultuous time can really affect that, right?
Yes. And so I had to take the attitude of how do you draw strength from it? And how is this a jumping off or an energy to create something from the ashes kind of? So two really funny things. Can I share something real quick?
Sure.
Really funny things happened during the pandemic. This is how the creative process works in my head. I had a nitpicky question about this pigeon that was on display in the Smithsonian. Everyone's heard about Shea and Me, or they might have in history class, this little pigeon that helped save this little battalion. I had one question, John, about this pigeon, because I went on the Smithsonian website and everything I'd read prior to and every picture I'd ever seen said that Shea and Me was a girl. Well, I go on the Smithsonian website because I'm doing my research for potentially a book. And I see this, she's listed as a boy. It's a he. And I'm going, wait, that's wrong. I think. I don't know. So I send this query out. And first I send it to a professor whose podcast I follow, Professor Greg Jackson of History That Doesn't Suck. And then I send a query to the Smithsonian. And then I send a blind query to Robert Laplander, who is the expert on the 77th Battalion, thinking these guys are professional historians. There's no way they're going to want to answer a wackadoodle question from some obscure lady down in Georgia, right? How about all three responded? And it began this really amazing correspondence. And then I connected Mr. Laplander with Dr. Blazek, who is the military curator at the Smithsonian. They became like friends, bros. And then there's this like organic process that began. So now I'm like all about it. I'm researching World War One. I have a graphic novel coming out that's depicting the 77th and some of the things that happened there. The pigeon is the least interesting part, and that keeps popping up in my work. I start on a trail. I'm thinking that this is the thing I want to communicate. This is the interesting part. And as I do my research, I uncover, no, that's not the most interesting part.
Mm.
So it's been this really, and that was just one of the five projects that I began and completed in 2020 during the pandemic. So I was like, whoa.
Well, say more though about the 77th Battalion. Talk about what that is.
So first of all, just a deep sigh, because what hubris I had going in thinking, I'm going to write a children's book about this pigeon. There is nothing worthy of a children's book of World War One. It was an exceptionally, horrifically bloody, amazing chapter of our nation's history, which is another reason why I was researching it.
Mm.
And it's this disparate group of individuals, the 77th Battalion is infamously known as the Lost Battalion. There's a movie about it. You can look it up on YouTube. You can see Robert Laplander give an amazing talk about it. They ended up being stuck in a pocket. It's called the pocket. And they stuck in this trench, very shallow, and on the edge of the Argonne Forest in France for 5 days without food, without water, being led by a gentleman, Captain Willingsley, who was by trade an attorney and was supposed to be a paper pusher.
Mm.
And that's Laplander's words. So he was supposed to never see battle, active combat, but by attrition, he ends up being the leader of this group of men. They enter into this pocket, and I'll try and make this brief. They enter in this pocket. Trench warfare is happening. Artillery is happening. They get stuck because their orders were to push forward no matter what. So they're pushing forward. Willingsley, however, keeps understanding it's putting them at risk of being caught behind enemy lines. And they are. They end up receiving both German fire and Allied fire because they mistakenly send correspondence of their coordinates. And so they're just getting slaughtered. By the time they come out of that pocket, 5 days later, and some people attribute Shea and Me as being the hero of that story, but Laplander quickly hit me onto, no, that's not true necessarily. There's only 179 of them left. It's tragic.
Wow.
But out of that story, here I am in 2020. 20, light years away from these men and all they sacrificed. Robert Laplander brought that story to life. I became impassioned about it because he's impassioned about it. And I changed my whole original idea. But I think that what we can take from that story, John, is that the 77th was made up of a mixed bag of lower middle class immigrants to America. They had so many different languages that when they first started training in New York, in Yaphank, there were 42 different languages being spoken. So you can't tell me that we can't come together as a people if these men of all these different languages who came to America and were conscripted, by the way, they didn't sign up. They were conscripted and were given the task, advance no matter what. You're going to have barbed wire, trenches, artillery fire, flamethrowers, probably gas. Oh, yeah. Go fight for this country that you just entered into and save it. I think we can do it. I think we can come together. How can we not? So that's that story.
In oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Now you work with, children's book authors or wannabe children's book authors, to help illustrate their vision. Basically. I mean, they come to you with what their project and you, illustrate their book.
Yes. And I pride myself on, if the relationship is really good, which, okay, caveat, and this is where I like to be transparent. My very first client, I won't say who, fired me because I didn't produce. I had something happen in my family. And I'm very open about this. My stepfather got diagnosed with rapid advancing dementia. And they live 3 states away. So I got sidetracked. So my first client fired me. It was a disaster. I learned from that, though. I didn't give up. My next client, Carla Wright Jukes, I pride myself on being able to literally get into her head because she wrote the words, but she kept saying, like you, I can't draw, Erica. I said, that's okay. Just tell me about this. And the moment I get impassioned by their vision, I'm on. It's a symbiotic relationship. I want the best illustrator, I feel, becomes almost psychic. And I was laughing at this because just last night I was talking with one of my clients, Michaela Ben. And she laughed. She said, how do you know? Should I send her some more drawings? How do you know what my living room looks like? Because the book is loosely based on her family. How did you know that that's placed there? And I'm just like, the communication and the kind of the symbiotic relationship between the illustrator and the trust and the author is huge. That trust is the underpinnings, if you think about it, for any great business relationship. And that's what I do.
Yeah. So for those of us, and maybe I'm the only one, but you know, I get to ask the questions. So that's the nice thing. But for those of us that don't know how this works, is it common for, children's books to be written with the author who needs an illustrator like you are, or,
Ooh, that's a great question. It depends on how you're working on publishing your book in the world. Great question, because I found out, I've been working with self-published authors primarily. I recently found out that big box publishers usually do not receive the manuscript already illustrated. They usually receive the manuscript, and if they take it on, they will then assign their own in-house illustrator. And oftentimes their in-house illustrator, and this is from what I've been told by other illustrators, so please don't flame me, folks, if this is entirely incorrect, but this is what I've been told. They will oftentimes not get the manuscript. They'll just get a general treatment of this is the scene where this has to happen, or this particular character is doing this, which I find, and probably again, I'll get some hate mail from this, very cold. I find that to be counterintuitive. I find like I'm thinking of that as a surgery. So imagine you have a patient on the table, which would be the book. And your job is to resurrect that patient, which means to publish the book. And let's say that the head surgeon is like, scalpel. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you hear someone tell a nurse in another room, okay, at this point, you're supposed to grab a sharp object and cut that body open. And you're like, what the? Are we doing eye surgery? What are we doing? Leg surgery, heart surgery, brain surgery? You can't just do that. That's not what? And so to my thinking, and please help me, folks, if that's not the way you go about it, just let me know. I'd love to learn, but that's weird to me. So it is unusual, John, but there have been circumstances where people have actually either self-published or gotten an agent with the manuscript already illustrated, or the big box publisher has seen their work and says, yes, we want you and we like what's already there. Let's put it out.
Gotcha. Now, so what's the advice you give to someone that wants to write a children's book?
Oh, great question. First, be committed to why. So I have read It Starts With Why. I love Darren Hardy. Follow him actively. But if your motivation is, I'm going to make $1 million. I have this idea for this children's book about a ladybug, and I'm going to make $1 million. This is where I have to get Southern on you. Honey child, no. Please do not try to do that, because you will get frustrated / fail / whatever. Your heart has to be in what you're about to create. There has to be a reason. So that's so weird to ask that question, because I pride myself on working with exceptional authors who are giving back through their books. And can I just give you like a quick shout out for each one?
Yeah. I really wanted to get to that. I wanted you to give folks a sample of the books you've done, and let's shout them out.
Okay. So the first one is Carla Wright Jukes, who wrote A No Don't Day. Mm-hmm. It's about a mom who has a loving relationship with her son. And he says he doesn't like the word don't. He feels kind of bad when his mom says it so much. So they try this experiment called a no, don't. It's a loving book. Carla wrote it because she wants parents to have loving, nonviolent communication with their children, and not just like knee-jerk reaction to a child's question and honoring who they are without at the same time giving away the farm. I mean, like, she doesn't just completely let them run wild. She comes up with a new way of communicating. Let's be clear. She's like, go for it, man. Eat popsicles all day. No, she actually changes her style of communication. So that's a no, don't day. And the second book that had come out, which was not in order, by the way, I had not done this book the second, but it was the quickest, was Om Yoga Kids by Jessica Carter. And I can't tell you how valuable this book is it's illustrations of children doing different yoga poses. Mm. And it's illustrated in a fun way, in a fun, engaging way. And so supporting children and, you know, being healthy in the world. The next book that came out is called Flora by Lisette Perry. And by the way, I'm saying Flora like that because, not because I'm Hispanic, but because I love the way it sounds in my ear. She is a great author who has written a book, and the book comes in both English and Spanish. So on one side of the book, you're reading the book, it's illustrated because she's from Puerto Rico and the book is placed in Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. And you flip it over, it's in another language. So it's a great tool to learn, but there's a loving story told within its pages. Mm-hmm. And that's a part of a series. And it shows a heroine who we don't see normally. It's an older woman, a grandmother, an abuela, who is kind of the wise woman of the island. And she tells engaging stories to the children to kind of drive home her point. So she kind of helps these two little boys understand that they shouldn't be quarreling through her stories. Mm-hmm. Then the next book, and this is all like jumping around, so it was weird because one was done before the other one, but didn't come out, and it's bizarre. The next book that came out was Mashup Man by Pam Saunders and Charlie. And this is one of the most unique books I've had a chance to work on because it's a comic series. So the first one, Charlie has Down syndrome, but guess what? That's not the most interesting part of Charlie. Charlie loves superheroes. I sit with Charlie probably about twice a week or maybe once a week. Not so much recently, but he is so creative. He runs circles around me. And so he believes his superpower is he can see people's real insides of their talents. So he and his special friends are everyday superheroes. And they have alternate identities and they have like technology. And then, you know, so the second one of that is coming out, Pandemic Panic. That's coming out in the next week or so.
Yeah.
And it's a joy to work on because it was conceived by a child who you normally don't see in a comic as a hero, right? But I don't make that like preachy. I made it funny because it's fun. It's an adventure. The least interesting part of Charlie is his Down syndrome. The most interesting part of Charlie is his imagination. Mm. And let me think, what was the next one? My book. Little Mr. Fix-It, Assist in the To-Do List by Michaela Benn. This book was launched by Kickstarter, made the goal, was highlighted as a favorite project they love on Kickstarter. And it shows a little boy as he goes about his day And he happens to be African American with his dad, fixing things, doing the honey-do list. It's adorable. It's a great book. So I fall in love with the vision of these authors, and I get their passion. And that's so easy for me to then go and do the illustrations. And then the last book is my book, my fairy book, which is coming out this week.
All right.
Woo! And next week. Woohoo!
And that's the Little Bayou Fairy.
Yes.
Okay.
So let me clarify too.
Sure.
My Kickstarter supporters have been waiting for this book patiently because it was supposed to launch in February of last year. But February last year?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Great time, Erica.
Yeah.
So I've been reassuring them all along, like, listen, guys, this has been like if this were a pregnancy, this would be an elephant birth. Because this book has been percolating far too long. And so they're patient with me. God bless them. Mm. But the ebook version, I'm trying to get out tomorrow morning, Mardi Gras. Come on. It takes place in Louisiana. But the worst case scenario, the book itself printed version for general sales will be out by the 24th or the 25th. Mm. Just check my site. I keep people apprised of everything. It's not just the usual books too. It's a fairy tale, but because I'm always that girl, there is a actual real life treasure hunt involved. So, cause I'm that Willy Wonka generation where you got to win something. Hello. So enjoy the book. You know, early readers, I make it very lushly illustrated. Reluctant readers, I make sure there's fun stuff in there for you to look at and you start to learn different words. And then I've got some new projects coming up in the wings, like the Single Moms Crushing It journal with my friend Christina. And then also there's two animal-centered books coming out very shortly.
Oh, wow.
Oh, boy, that's a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm thinking about like, wow.
Yeah, okay. You've been incredibly busy. That's awesome. So I know the answer may be a little different for each of these books, but where can folks go to get these books? And by the way, we'll have links in the show notes.
Well, the short answer is, John, and this is great, most of them can be found already on Amazon.
Okay.
You can, I mean, let's be real. So this is the business side of it. You get a bigger royalty if they go directly through the author's website.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have the time, and you don't have the time for me to sit there and list every individual author's website. But if you Google their names, you'll find their websites.
Right.
But let's see. Mashup Man can be found directly on their website. That's the only exception. Mashupman.com.
Okay.
But the others, like I'm Yoga Kids, No Don't Day, Flora, and soon to be Little Mr. Fix It, and soon to be my book, will be found on Amazon. So you can go right there. You can look on the site here, just cut and paste the author's names for a find, and you'll find the books.
So let's say someone has heard this. Someone's got a children's book in their head they'd like to execute on and get out there. I mean, what? How do you work with someone like that? Talk about that journey and how someone can expect that to unfold. Working with you.
You're asking such great questions. I did not write all these out, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. John's come with some really good ones. That's actually a critical question because I'm not everyone's flavor of Kool-Aid.
Mm.
So please remember that very first client firing me. I feel it's really essential to sit down with the client and, you know, these days virtually, but we start off with a Zoom call and we kind of like, it's kind of like a job interview. I mean, kind of like, you know, you put your best foot forward, you're all shined up and looking good and, you know, putting your portfolio in front of them. And then they're in turn are sharing their vision and manuscript with them. But you're kind of sitting there gauging like, you know, are you going to hire me? Am I going to hire you? Because it is symbiotic. I have fired clients. And since that first me being fired, I have fired clients because there's two things. The creative process, I wish I could say you can literally push a button on me and things will go according to clockwork. But no. People have to have a modicum of patience. In fact, I tell them a lot. It's a lot like the stages of grief. When you're creating a book, there's always going to be that one stage where you're just like, okay. And I don't care how smooth the process goes.
Mm-hmm.
You're both just about ready to just like, it's emotionally charged because this is your baby that you're putting onto the world.
Sure.
And I acknowledge and respect that. So I want to make sure I'm a good fit for you. And I want to make sure that you're a good fit for me. And I readily accept and acknowledge that last year I did not handle my workload very well. Mm. But, you know, again, hashtag 2020. But this upcoming year, I have a business model where every quarter I have maximum 2 books I'm working on at any given point in time, maximum, because I have to deliver what I'm promising. So I'm sold out through the end of 2021. But if you're patient, you really want to work with me, I'm good for scheduling for 2022. I'm all right. I look forward. I have an insurance policy in case something happens to me. So we're good.
Okay.
But that's how I work with them. And also the pricing. I have to make sure the fee model works for them and they have to understand how it works for me, because that's actually one big mystery for folks too. I don't get paid royalties off of every book you sell. That is not how I work. Some illustrators do work that way. I don't. So from the gate, you pay, you know, a certain amount down, halfway through you pay the next, and at the very end of the project, you pay the last. And that's it for me. You go off and make that money. Mm. If I do my job well, you'll sell a lot of books. Okay.
Erica Ramsey Bowen has been with us, folks, and she's a, well, she's the chief shenanigans wrangler, which her two businesses, and she's a children's book illustrator. Erica, this has been great. And for those that would like to get in touch with you, and maybe they've got a vision in their head they'd like for you to execute on, or at least talk to you about that, tell them how they can do that.
Very easily. You can email me, peachypotraits. I'm going to spell it for you. My lawyer, by the way, hates that name because he says it's too complicated. But I'm like, it sounds like a little southern, like peachypotraits. Peach, like a peach you eat, P-E-A-C-H, E, first initial of my name, paw, a dog paw, traits. What are their little traits? T-R-A-I-T-S. So it's peachypotraits@gmail.com, or you can go to littlebayouferry.com, or you can find me on everywhere. Facebook, Little Bayou Ferry. You can find me on LinkedIn, Erica Ramsey Bowen. You can find me on Insta, Create What You Wish. And I'm also on Twitter, Create What You Wish. So it's Cree, C-R-E, 8, What You Wish. Spelled out that way.
Folks, Erica Ramsey Bowen. Erica, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for being with us.
You can't see audience, but I'm making a heart sign to John right now. I'm making a heart sign to you all. Yeah. I am so grateful and humbled. I can't thank you enough. And shout out to my team, Fairy Folks. Whoop, whoop. Mm. And my Kickstarter peeps and my mom. Love you, Mom.
I love it. Thank you, Erica. Great to have you.
Thank you so much.
Folks, just a quick reminder that if you've got some administrative task in your business that is weighing you down and you need to get off your plate, maybe that involves some bookkeeping. Maybe that involves some general administrative issues, marketing. Here's my solution for you is give Essie Escobedo over at Office Angels a call. Speaking of interesting titles, she's the chief executive angel over there. And so what she will do is listen to your problem. She will pair you with an angel or two, depending on how big your problem is, and they'll fly in, get the job done, and fly out. And they do it on an ongoing or as-needed basis, and they've been working virtually for 20 years, so a pandemic doesn't scare them in the least. You can go to officeangels.us and see the full scale of services that Essie and her team offer. My suggestion is just give her a call. 770-442-9246. Tell her John Ray sent you. And I'm sending you there because I use her services myself. And she's wonderful, and so is her team. So I think you'll be glad that you made that call. And folks, you can find North Fulton Business Radio on all the major podcast apps. We're on all of them. North Fulton Business Radio is the search term, and we would love it if you would go on your favorite app and give us a great review, and a great review equals 5 stars, not 4, but 5, please. And it's not about us. It's about the guest. So we want people to find the show so they can find the guests that we have and potentially use the services of our guests, right? So it's not about me. It's not about Business Radio X. It's about our guests. So if you could do that for us, we would appreciate it. And if you'd like to connect with us on social media, we're on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, Instagram, I think maybe something else. I don't know, whatever. North Fulton BRX on all of those social media channels. And if you find one I don't know about, let me know. But check us out there as well. So for my guest, Erica Ramsey Bowen, I'm John Ray. Join us next time here on North Fulton Business Radio.